support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. A fight over roughly 100 acres of trees in King County could point towards major changes for how the state's Department of Natural Resources manages forests. Last summer, the DNR planned to auction off some timber land near Duval. It's something the department does regularly. Something that doesn't happen regularly, 7 of the 9 members of the King County Council came out against this auction, called the Wishbone Timber Sale. And then environmental groups sued to stop the sale. They claimed that the forest was too important for capturing and holding carbon to be logged. Stephen Kropp is the founder of Legacy Forest Defense Coalition, which signed on to the Wishbone lawsuit. He says the plaintiffs have big ambitions.
What we're trying to do now is show through a series of lawsuits filed in different counties challenging different timber sales a general pattern of abuse and negligence and failure to account for the climate impacts of these logging these century-old forests.
A similar 2022 suit in Jefferson County was successful, though by the time the judge ruled, the area had already been logged. In the dispute over the Wishbone timber sale near Duval, last month a King County judge agreed with the conservation groups who brought the lawsuit. The judge blocked the sale and told the DNR it needed to analyze the climate change impacts of logging the Wishbone area. It's part of a shifting landscape for the state's Department of Natural Resources. For decades, the agency has operated with the understanding that it was mandated by the state's constitution to earn money for its beneficiaries, like public schools and universities. And that meant, for the most part, logging forest land for revenue. But a 2022 Washington State Supreme Court decision opened the door for the DNR to consider other public benefits when assessing the value of land, like its role in capturing carbon. Pair that Supreme Court decision with the multiple lawsuits being brought by conservation groups to protect forests with an upcoming election, and there might be a change a-brewing for state-managed forests. To fill us in on what happened with the Wishbone timber sale and how it fits into this larger story, I'm joined by Daniel Beekman, a reporter for the Seattle Times who's been covering the sale. Hi, Dan. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
So you visited the Wishbone timber plot before. Just to set the scene for us, what does it look like?
Oh, yeah. I went and visited with some advocates last summer. Summer 2023, and to get there from Seattle, I drove, you know, over to the east side and then further east past Duval and then sort of eventually up a gravel dirt road into sort of what felt like the Cascade foothills, lots of sort of sword ferns covering the ground. I described it in the story I wrote last summer as sort of like a sea or an ocean of ferns lapping at the bottoms of these trunks of these trees, and various types of trees, cedar, hemlock, maple, etc.
Now, this is not old growth, right? This has been logged, but it's been a long time.
Correct. It's not, and I'm no, you know, huge expert, even as a reporter, on forests, so take what I say with a grain of salt, but you know, it's not old growth in the sense that it's just been there untouched forever. These areas of the Wishbone Sale were mostly logged by hand saws in sort of the early 20th century, like I believe the 1920s and 1930s. There may have been a little bit of logging also later on, but mostly that's when it was. So they're not old growth. And there's debate over then what to call them, because, you know, trees now have been growing there for 100 years, some of the big ones. So what do you call that? And that's part of sort of what's at issue.
Yeah. And how strenuously do you protect it? So I mentioned that a judge has blocked this timber sale for now. The Department of Natural Resources sells timber across the state all the time. What was different about this sale?
Yeah, what was different about this sale is that a bunch of environmental advocacy groups got together to try to stop it. And it's not the only sale that they've tried to stop in recent years, but it's a pretty high profile one, partly because it's near Seattle. A lot of the other sales that there have been debates over in recent years have been further away from our, biggest city. And the groups, in this case sort of opposed it on multiple fronts. One is just that they made the argument that this isn't an old growth forest, but it's a mature or what they call legacy forest. It's getting towards old growth, it's future old growth, and it should be protected from an environmental and ecological point of view for animal habitat and all of that stuff that forests people like forests for. But they also challenged it, some of the groups legally. They filed a lawsuit, and the lawsuit is about climate change. And they basically made the argument that in doing an environmental review required by state law before going ahead with this sale, with this project, this timber project, that DNR did not properly consider or analyze the climate change impacts of this sale. That was kind of the crux of what the judge ruled on. DNR made the case that, hey, we did look at climate change impacts in the sense that we looked over our whole forest management plan and how we do timber sales across the state. And on the whole, we are doing more good for combating climate change or for protecting the climate than we are doing bad across our portfolio. There you go. And what the advocates in this case said and what the judge agreed with is that's not good enough. Even though you haven't been doing this in the past on all these timber sales, from now on, at least on this one, and then by extension, other ones, you need to look at the project by project, sale by sale climate change impacts of what you're doing. You need to analyze those and consider alternatives. And you can't move ahead with this sale until you look at that local climate, potential climate change impact.
Yeah, and that indicates maybe a potential tide turning here in the way that DNR is going to be able to manage these lands and sell forests like this in the future. Logging has been considered a vital part of Washington's economy, Dan, since the founding of the state. DNR, of course, uses logging money to fund school construction and maintenance at the state capitol. But it was already on some uneasy footing after this 2022 Washington Supreme Court decision, right? What happened then, and how is it affecting DNR timber harvesting?
Sure. So going back, my understanding, decades, there's been sort of debates about how to best manage these forest lands, these state trust lands, how much timber harvesting to do, and on what type of lands. And basically, the way that DNR had operated was that they had a responsibility to their trustees, so the people of Washington State, and that the federal government sort of gave the land for in that case, and to the counties to maximize revenue. How do you maximize revenue from forests? You harvest them for timber. And so that was sort of their operating principle while protecting, certain forests that are spotted owl habitat or, for other reasons. Then some advocates sort of challenged that assumption and asked the courts to find that actually, harvesting timber as the main sort of way of handling these trust lands and that responsibility was actually not benefiting the people of Washington overall, because it was harming the environment, basically, as I understand it. And in 2022, the state Supreme Court ruled in that case and actually sided with DNR and with the state, saying, we're not going to find that harvesting timber is unconstitutional. We're not going to tell DNR that they can't do that to generate revenue from these lands. But they did say that, and sort of acknowledge in the ruling that the DNR doesn't have to harvest timber as a way to generate that revenue, that there are various ways that they can use these lands to for the benefit of the people of the state and the counties. And so that sort of opened the door, even though the advocates didn't sort of win the case overall, they felt like it opened the door. And to some extent, DNR, I think, felt like it opened the door to different ways of generating revenue from these forests and different ways of managing them.
So what happens now? I mean, we have the judge who has blocked the sale of the Wishbone Forest land in the Duval area. This state Supreme Court ruling has sort of opened up the idea that maybe DNR doesn't have to sell these lands in order to have them benefit the state. Are you expecting to see a lot more challenges to forest sales in the future, Dan? And how do you expect this to unfold?
Yeah, I think there's sort of a couple of tracks, it seems to me, from my understanding. So some advocates who haven't been pursuing this route of sort of challenging these sales on the grounds of climate change, I think, have been pushing for just trying to convince DNR to sort of create a more watertight category for these mature legacy forests and just to protect them. They don't want to have to keep fighting this in court on even on the grounds of climate change. They're just saying, let's protect these forests. And we'll see what that looks like going forward. There's actually a there's an election this year for
Oh, I've
public
heard
lands
there's
to
an election this year. Yes.
for
Yeah,
public
say
lands
more on that.
commissioner, among other things, the person who runs DNR, the current lands commissioner Hillary Frans, is on her way out. She was going to run for governor and then is instead running for Congress, and so there's a crowded race to replace her. So partly what happens with these mature or legacy forests, as some call them, could depend on who's next in charge of DNR, who the next governor is, that kind of thing. On the sort of the legal front and like this climate change question, I think it's still a little bit up in the air. So the judge in this case technically ruled just about this sale, and I think both sides of it sort of see it as, sort of extending probably to the consideration of other sales, if not technically so in practice, because DNR doesn't want to just keep losing different versions of the same lawsuit all over the state. But they've also said they don't know exactly, there's no best practice that they have, they say, to analyze climate change impacts on such a small local scale. And so right now, they said they're talking to the Department of Ecology and trying to figure out how they're going to do that. And once they've done that, then it'll be a question of, okay, so like, what did those analyses show? And how do they take those into account? Do they still try to go ahead with these sales and say we can mitigate these climate change impacts in some other way? Or does it sort of force them to leave these type of forests alone going forward? And I'm just not sure what that looks like exactly, but I think from the perspective of the advocates who won this case, who have been trying to block this particular sale among others, they're hopeful that the more rulings like this that there are, that more that sort of legally and politically changes the game.
So we have questions. I mean, I'm curious how this is going to be affecting school funding as well, because Washington State school funding is already, a really tough issue, especially rural schools that benefit to a greater degree from these trust lands. And then, of course, you mentioned the election. King County Councilmember Dave Upthegrove is one of the candidates, and he also was one of the folks who was a strong opponent of the timber sales. So certainly huge effects of that election. Daniel Beekman, reporter with the Seattle Times, thanks very much. We're going to be following your reporting on this going forward.
Thanks for having me on to talk about it.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m., Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.